when you can embrace, accept that there's these unwanted things, there's these feelings I don't want, they become less powerful, because their power comes in pushing them away. You know, a lot of energy expended in pushing them away.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Humanity of Trading podcast. I'm Kyle. That's the series creator, Cleo, on my left, right? I can't tell looking at this. Actually, doesn't matter because it's audio only. And then since today we're diving into mindfulness, we had to get our friend Sean Sawyer from Sound Performance Psychology to come back with us. How are you doing today, Sean?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me back. Glad to be here.
How's things going, man? New year, getting you hitting the ground running. Things busy for you?
Things, you know, this time of year is a little slow in my business. Well, in the pure mental health side of my business, this is like the slowest time of the year.
Really?
Aren't people messed up from families?
Yeah.
You would think that with all the New Year's resolutions and everything, people would be trying.
Yeah, but people are full of shit.
Right? Yeah.
Who follows their resolutions? Come on. You know. It's Cleo. It's funny. It's been a long time since I've read about it, but so it coincides with something dark, but good to be aware of, is that spring is suicide season. Mm-hmm. So check on your people in the spring, ask how people are doing. There's no wrong way to do it, except you're not suicidal, are you? outside of that ask in any way, shape, or form, you're not going to increase the odds they kill themselves. But anyways, the reason that is suicide season is because this time of year, people very much expect to be sad or depressed or down, especially if they're predisposed to stuff. So, you know, they don't get help, or people are already in therapy, but
Sean, is that just because of the, like, is that a Northern Hemisphere phenomena or is that Southern Hemisphere too? So I would think that might have to do with like the lack of sunlight, the further north you go.
Right. Coming out of winter.
Yeah.
It's definitely a factor. And I don't know how to measure which one is more significant, but there's also, you know, families, whether you're with them or not, they are the source of most people's pain. And a lot of people don't like the holidays. A lot of people, you know, get down. So yeah, supposedly the expectation is, they're not surprised if you feel depressed or they expect it. Plus, like in the Northeast, it's cold.
And gray.
And no one wants to leave the house. But also you'll start to see in the spring, people will start to come around because like when spring springs and people don't feel better, they'll start to reach out because the expectation all of a sudden doesn't fit anymore. I expect to be sad in just February. Why am I still sad in April? You know, or whatever. It's like, that's more the mental health business. You know, the trading psych does seem to have a little bit slower this time of year, but I don't know. I don't think it'd be for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think a lot of people slow down over like the holidays anyway, and they're just slow coming back.
Yeah. And you know, bigger traders that certainly aren't trading when there's, you know, that garbage volume and thin ladders and whipsawing price action. Like they're in, you know.
The professionals aren't trading on like those half days and
just degens.
Oh, okay.
Like us.
I mean, that's some good information to know. I mean, obviously want to be mindful of the circumstances that people are kind of coming into, but maybe we could talk a little bit about the topic on hand, which was mindfulness itself and kind of like what that means to you, like what the benefits of that are and like how you can kind of go about experiencing that or exercising that or practicing it.
Yeah. Cause mindfulness is a big part of your thing, right? Yes. Like in your Discord server, you talk a lot about mindfulness, and with your traders, you even offer mindfulness sessions sometimes.
We do a couple sessions a week, but you know, and I twist people's arms to practice. So I would start out with, you know, Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness. He's kind of the guy that took mindfulness as mostly a religious tradition, you know, and quantified it as much as possible. He's one of the first people that did the research that showed what mindfulness does. It showed its effect on the brain. And his definition is awareness of the present moment without judgment and with acceptance, basically, if I'm paraphrasing.
That's a great definition, though.
Yeah. Mindfulness of the present moment with acceptance and without judgment. And that's those three little factors in that definition are not easy to achieve.
I feel like there's hours of work in each of those little statements.
Years, I think. Yeah. You know,
right? Because you could be judgmental of the present moment, but then can you accept that you're being judgmental? Right? You can always go more observational.
Yeah. And can you accept how you're actually feeling? Because mindfulness is, despite popular conception, it is definitely not about feeling better. It is not to feel better. It may have that effect, but it's to get better at feeling. Not to feel better, get better at feeling.
So it's more about understanding what you're feeling now.
Reality.
Right.
Acceptance without judgment. So if I feel like crap, I have to admit I don't feel good. If I feel sad, if I feel anxious, if I feel desperate, you know, I'm thinking about bad things for trading in particular. I don't accept those things and I trade anyways, guess how I'm going to trade that day?
Yeah.
You know,
I think we've all been there. You've all had the morning where you come in, you can't quite put your finger on what's wrong, but something feels off on the day and you try to power through. And next thing you know, you've hit a personal daily loss limit and you're trying to figure out what the hell just happened. And
I love that you're bringing this in because it really is a trope, right? Of this idea of, okay, I'm being mindful if I'm peaceful, right?
Yeah, I
get this image of this person like meditating on a rock near the ocean.
Right.
And
with pebbles stacked up like on those pictures on Instagram.
Yes, and they're peaceful and like enlightened and they are being mindful. And that's not what you're saying at all, actually.
Not really.
I mean, maybe they are being mindful, but that's not the only way to be mindful.
Correct. And what I would say that is mindfulness practice. Philosophically, maybe all mindfulness is practice, but when you are in that scenario that you just described, that lovely scenario, or you're in your, your meditation room when you have your altar and your pillow and you're sitting on your butt and you're, cross-legged, that's mindfulness practice. Like, that's not Zen, just for the record, in my opinion, and a lot of other people's opinions.
Okay, what's the difference between mindfulness and Zen?
Because what?
Can I try?
Yes.
I'm going to guess that Zen is like the act of like trying to not think, the act of like actively clearing your thoughts from your mind and just being present in the moment. But mindfulness sounds more like you're trying to really understand what you are feeling in the moment and why you are feeling that way.
Yeah, there's no trying to stop anything or clear anything. And, it's very easy to be mindful or Zen or whatever you want to call it in either one of those situations. But how about being Zen when you're, working your job at the gas station and someone points a gun at your face? What about being Zen, when you're, Trump just talked about tariffs and your trade just blew through its stops and you just lost 2 G's because your stops didn't work. Because that's not how reality, your ladder was too dry and everyone pulled their bid and you got smashed. That's when you're, that tests mindfulness and Zen is like, it's when the bullets are flying, not when you're sitting comfortably in your, meditation room, burning incense. That's cool. That's practice. Do it. But that does not do shit. You're trading.
Right. Because I'm not practicing it in that moment. I'm not. When I'm actually sitting in front of the desk and trying to come up with a trade, I'm not sitting there thinking, oh, what am I feeling right now? Why am I feeling this way? No, I'm thinking about probably all of the terrible trauma that I'm trying to deal with.
Well, and, funnily enough, I mean, part of what I encourage people to do is almost to do what you said, but not quite so touchy-feely. It's just data collection.
Yeah.
Traders were supposed to like data, supposedly, and, tracking all this stuff and making all these little lines on charts, doing all this stuff.
Yeah, they like data on spreadsheets and charts.
Yes, yes.
Yes, they like data outside their skin. You need to collect data inside your skin. Thoughts, feelings, urges, is huge sensations, emotions, like that. That's the stuff that matters in terms of your own data collection. And yes, you can collect the data. You can see its impact over time because, yes, it's going to be subjective in your collection, but it's your, but you're the subject, and all that matters is your answer to it. So, like for me, what I ask people to do is rate themselves a few times a day on what I call a feel scale, which is an adaptation of a very widely accepted scale in my business that is for measuring subjective units of distress. That's where it comes from. But this is because trading, the nature of trading, it's not just measuring distress, it's measuring euphoria.
Yeah.
And, feeling too good, feeling, like you're the man, woman, or the whatever.
Batman.
And best trader in the world, Skunkmaster 420. Follow my tweets and get rich, whatever.
But euphoria is the best.
Yeah, and that's the problem. That's literally. Euphoria is great.
Oh, yeah.
Feeling good is great.
It's just, what do you do with that?
Right.
Do you double down on your position? What do you do when you're euphoric?
Exactly. It's super dangerous in trading because euphoria by its nature is a bit intoxicating. There's a lot of neurochemicals that go with euphoria. There's a lot of dopamine. There's a lot of serotonin. There's a lot of oxytocin, which is tricky. Oxytocin is like love chemical. You know, when you're in love with someone that is informed by oxytocin spraying all over your brain.
There's a real love potion number 9. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, yeah, I guess
amazing.
So.
Amazing.
Yeah, oxytocin is love.
I feel that's... love when I look at TradingView.
So then you gotta be careful of your euphoria then. But measuring, you know, paying attention to both sides of that spectrum, because the high side is just as dangerous as the low side. So it's about, you know, finding a middle ground. My scale runs from -5 to +5. And my rule is if you're outside the threes, you don't trade.
Yeah.
Cut your trade. You wait. You do something proactive, behavioral to get yourself more back in the center. You do want to be a buzzkill when you're trading. You don't want to be euphoric when you're trading because you're going to lose it.
Right.
You're going to lose your money. You're going to give it back. You made 10 Gs. You're going to hand back 12 the next day. You know, most people. You know, I'm not saying that's everybody, but
I have an action that I take when I'm euphoric, and I've learned to do this, which is exit the position.
That's
perfect. Like if I'm feeling that feeling and I can feel the feeling of greed also, I'm like, oh, it's going to keep going. Oh my God, this is the best. And I'm feeling that feeling. It's like, okay, get out.
Once you start counting the profits of your stretch target, or when the stretch target starts moving up, then that's the sign to me that, oh, no, my stop needs to come up like severely high, like a lot higher.
Yeah.
It is my biggest problem still in trading. I mean, I'm spending the money before I've exited the trade.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, or I'm like, you know, transferring it to my tax, like whatever. Like it's, I'm so far in the future. And that's part of the reason mindfulness is so important. I am no longer mindful. I am off in the future. And, you know, that's essentially losing touch with reality, because the future is not reality. The future is a situation you create in your imagination, and then you're acting or believing on it, believing it and being affected by it. The most classic example everyone would relate to is worry. Mm-hmm. Worry is you think about something in the future, you make up a scenario, usually a negative one, like how am I gonna achieve this goal, pay this bill,
how am I gonna be ready for this test, or
ready for exactly. And then per this now, this thing that you've imagined, you're now upset about it and your body is in distress. You know, there's cortisol and there's tension and there's whatever. I mean, that's
about a hypothetical thing that's not happening and may not ever happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're already experiencing the worst possible scenario that may or may not happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's again where mindfulness comes in, because if you don't have we'll get into the definition a little more, but if you don't have a strong relationship with your thoughts, if you can't sort of step back and observe and see your thoughts for what they are, which is a temporary and passing phenomenon, and you see them as facts, you can get yourself in trouble. So is
part of that, because I remember like one of the tenets of Stoicism was like taking away the descriptors of like any sort of situation you're describing. Like, so you're watching the markets and there's a strong sell-off, like, the word strong there is a descriptor, or that was a scary move. Like that's a descriptor. Let's take those descriptors out of it and let's just look at what actually happened. That was a move down. Then when you start taking those descriptors off of it, it becomes a lot less
traumatizing.
I guess that's a word. Sure.
Becomes less traumatizing. What else? What are you gonna say?
Trying to think. Less real, I guess. Less imperative that you act immediately.
So, yes, and so an exercise I did recently, I don't know how much you're going to see this picture. See this picture?
Yeah.
What is this person doing? So describe this picture. Describe this picture. You know,
woman
about this person.
Smiling.
She doesn't, she doesn't look all there, though.
Keep going.
I mean, the eyes look like she's not, like, really paying attention to that moment, like she's off somewhere else.
Okay. What else?
We're describing her.
You're just telling me what you see. Yeah.
I just see a happy woman. I mean, she looks
with brown hair, long hair. She's a white lady.
She's smiling. Looks like she's got someone next to her.
Yeah. She's like embracing two people on either side.
Yes.
That we can't see.
So someone said smiling. Someone said happy, right?
Seemed like there was
right. One is objective. The other is an interpretation.
Exactly.
Ah.
So all we know is that the corners of her mouth are curled up.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we see.
She could be farting.
Good one. Okay.
I do that when I fart too.
Some said smiling, some said that. So those are, that's turn that stoicism. or the edges of her mouth are curled up. You can see her teeth. Mm-hmm. Her eyes are squinting. She does have brown hair. She does have long hair. You said something about out of it?
She looked like she wasn't like present in that moment necessarily. Like her eyes were staring off past the point of the camera or somewhere else.
So that the second part would be mindful observation. The first part is a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So when you describe what, you know, oh, she looks like she's out of it, but really what it is her eyes are not facing the camera.
Yeah.
And she's looking past the camera, and that's all you know. Everything else is a subjective interpretation.
Right. Yada, objective yada. Versus subjective, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you do want to describe, I mean, two components of mindfulness are observation and description. But you try to do it the most factual as possible. Right. And a common analogy I use for people is Tony Romo and Jim Nantz. They're a pretty popular combination in sports announcers. And Jim Nantz is the play-by-play guy, and Tony Romo is the color guy.
Mm-hmm.
So Jim Nantz will be like, you know, Josh Allen steps back and throws 50 yards downfield, completion, out of bounds of 10 yards, you know. Tony Romo was like, oh my God, Josh Allen, no one else can make that throw. He's an alien.
Right.
There's three guys in the league that can make that throw. Wow. You know, that's
the color.
Color, yeah. Versus the.
You kind of need both, right?
No. Well,
I mean, different preferences.
You want to be. So Tony Romo is kind of the opposite of mindfulness, and Jim Nantz is mindfulness, in my opinion. So Jim Nantz is just giving you the facts. Josh Allen took five-step drop. He threw it 50 yards. It's out of bounds. It's out of bounds at 10. Romo is like, he's the best. He's an alien. No one else can do this. He's making all these judgments, non-judgmental stances.
They're kind of sensational.
It's the opposite. Yeah, right. It's all the subjective. It's all the emotion. You know, the reason I bring up Romo, you know, like he's kind of known to kiss certain players' asses and really hold them up, Pat Mahomes and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you want to be Jim Nantz when you're practicing mindfulness. You want to, it's facts only. It's just the data. It's just, you know, the woman has brown hair. The edges of her mouth are curled up. Her eyes are jetted off to the side. Not versus like, she looks kind of out of it.
Right.
You don't know, you know, you could be right. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just when we're collecting data and we're trying to collect data as traders, we don't want to be like, oh, this data is, you don't want to collect one little piece of data and be like, oh, this is bearish. You want to have it amongst a bunch of other data. So the more you can extract the data, you know, objectively, the more you can form your opinion objectively.
So it seems like...
I mean, as objectively as possible, sorry.
So I'm thinking about the example that we're using there where you have like subjective things, like she looks out of it. But then where I have to be careful then, I think, is that I can start looking for information that fits the narrative that I've already started to create.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So how do you recognize in the moment when you're doing something like that?
More mindfulness. More cowbell.
More cowbell. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, mindfulness is absolutely a skill. And the reality is what you just said is going to happen.
Yeah.
When you can reduce the frequency, what happens? You increase the probability of objective data collection. When you you don't have to, I mean, nobody, when practicing mindfulness, I think the first book I read about it was 2005 or 6 or something. It's a book called Mindfulness and Psychotherapy. It's a great book.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never heard of mindfulness before that. And practicing on and off that long, you know, I still lose and become very mindless in trading. It's not like it's going to be this perfect thing. Anyone who's trying to sell you that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're a human being. But again, just increasing probability, increasing frequency. So the more I practice mindfulness, the more likely I am to be able to have an experience like this. So the mindless person is like, you know, they lose the trade. And they're like, I'm such a blank. The mindful person can have that same exact experience, but I'm noticing the thought that I'm a freaking blankety blank.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the difference?
Yeah.
And it's not night and day, but it's everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is distance. It's, you know, I know, you know, the first one, oh, I'm such a, like, there's so much more emotion in that. It's believed. It's like basic fact versus my mind is telling me I'm a blankety blank again.
It's you said a word there, distance, and I think it kind of slipped in there, but it's almost like you're putting some extra distance between yourself and those thoughts when you put in that I'm noticing that I'm feeling. I'm noticing that I'm thinking.
That's exactly what you're doing. Cognitive distancing is another phrase that people use for mindfulness. There's some different schools of psychology use for mindfulness, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure. And it's a good descriptive term, mm-hmm. Cognitive distancing. And, you know, detached isn't quite what the goal is, but, you know, big fat grain of salt is part of the goal. And, you know, when I, even if it's positive, oh, I'm the best, I am hot. I'm noticing the thought that I'm hot. I'm right. noticing the thought that I'm telling me that I'm telling myself I'm the best. Because then, because if we talked about earlier intent, what happens if you don't check yourself?
Yeah.
That's a path to euphoria. That's a path to overtraining. It's a path to oversizing. You're giving it back.
Yeah. If anybody listened to the most recent roundtable episode, I think Flary had a pretty good example in The Good, Bad, and Ugly about how that euphoria can come back and, you know, bite you in the ass, like in a really quick way.
Destroy people, because most people don't perceive feeling good as bad,
right,
and it's not in most contexts.
Just when there's money on the line,
just when they're yeah, when you are trading, it's a huge problem. And you know, to get clinical, anyone that knows anyone or anyone that has experienced bipolar disorder knows how dangerous feeling good can be. Quite literally dangerous.
Really.
It's called mania, or it's called hypomania. That's what it's just mania, but a little bit less, well, much less severe. And, you know, mania is feeling extremely good. It's feeling like high when you haven't taken a drug. It, you know, makes you want to do, makes you stay up all night with creating things and cleaning, or, you know, driving 90 miles an hour in reverse down the thruway. Like it makes people do things that keep that excitement going. Yeah, this is obviously not so to traders, and if you do have bipolar disorder and you're a trader, like that definitely needs to be managed. That's a difficult combination.
So, Sean, that actually kind of ties in with an angle. I don't know if this is the appropriate place for it, so I'm just going to put it out there, and you guys can shut me down if it's something that we don't want to touch today. But something that it's been really fascinating me lately is trying to figure out, like, the mechanism that goes from I have these thoughts to now I'm taking action, where. Like if I'm sitting, I'm watching the charts and it's blowing through my levels and I'm wanting to be long, but now I can't be long because now it's just free falling. And now suddenly next thing I know, I'm clicking short because I need to be short now. And I've somehow thought myself into a trade to the point now where I'm actually like taking action on that.
So what's the question exactly? How to not do it?
I guess just it's kind of more just analyzing the mechanism that leads from the thought to the action. Like what is actually happening in there when we're clicking the button? Like, why do we go from thinking I should click the button to actually clicking the button?
In the context that you're talking about?
Which is kind of chasing, right?
Yeah, I guess that would be like when you start to let those emotions get away from you, then you start acting on them.
Yeah. You know, in that situation, I think it's... So the emotions are going to be different for different people when they see a trade go wrong and go against them and then chase it to a... So this is... You were long and you chase it to a short.
And that's just an example. I mean, there's many different versions of that, obviously.
Yes. So if you're completely fused with your thoughts, if there's no distance between your thoughts and your self-awareness, you're in trouble. But if you're mindful and, you know, in the zone, some people like to call it, which is cool.
Flow state's another thing on here that we wanted to get into with you a little bit more, but
yeah, that's a little different. But there's no distance between I'm having the thought and doing it.
Yeah.
So you could do a lot of things to intervene there. You could do mental rehearsal for a situation like that. You know, you can replay that situation over and over, and you know, try to just cut. Versus chase or whatever.
When you said rehearsal, what do you mean by that?
Visualization.
Just kind of like replaying it in your mind and then yep. doing the proper yep. actions instead of.
Right. This is what I need to do when something goes against me and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rehearse that. And in terms of here's why, it does not the answer should not, well, in my opinion, the answer should not be because I want to save money. The answer should be something related to, I don't want to screw over my family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hurt mm-hmm. my future. It needs to be something meaningful because there needs to be a counterpoint. Like it's a counterweight. Like it has to be something significant or else you will not do it. And people lose sight of that kind of stuff when they're trading. And mindfulness is a way to not lose that sight. Mindfulness is a way to include more in your experience so that you can make better decisions. Like mindfulness is not about eliminating anything or changing anything. It's about making more room for stuff. There's no situation where you learn anything by subtraction.
Mm-hmm.
No human, we don't learn anything by taking something away. Mm-hmm. We learn by taking more in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's this kind of thought, we need to eliminate negative thoughts. We need to eliminate greed. We need to eliminate fear.
That is like the shotgun approach, or that feels like the overreaction approach.
Yeah.
I feel bad when this happens and I need to just cut this out completely. Like, no, there's valuable things to learn from that about yourself and about how you act. And
yeah,
those scenarios are going to come up in other places and other times and other arenas, and having a good mechanism for dealing with those is only going to help you in the long run.
That's right. You learn by addition, not subtraction.
Yeah.
So with mindfulness, you know, and maybe we need to pause and do an exercise and have the audience do the exercise so that we can get past this being too intellectual. Maybe we should do that soon. But when you accept and are open and honest about what your experience is, whether you like it or not, that's truth. That's all the data. That's not part of the data. That old school dated ass psychology that says, you know, you should get rid of negative thoughts, challenge them with positive thoughts. First of all, the research says it doesn't work in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all,
because they keep coming up anyway, right? We can't actually squash them.
And the way that we now know, we didn't know this until the 80s. B.F. Skinner guessed at it in the 60s. But by the 80s or 90s, we know for sure that linguistically, those positive thoughts, those positive challenges, they start to wire neurologically with the negativity. So then the positive thought triggers the negative emotion.
Hmm.
So you do not want to do that. And people in my business, there's a lot of people that were taught by dinosaurs and still do that stuff. You got to be very careful with that. You do not want to be challenging your negative thoughts. You will make them stronger in the long run. So when you can embrace, accept that there's these unwanted things, there's these feelings I don't want, they become less powerful because
mm-hmm.
their power comes in pushing them away. You know, a lot of energy expended in pushing them away.
It's scary, the thought of confronting them sometimes, because
welcoming them.
Yeah. It's like a fear of that. If I speak it into being, then that means that that's who I am almost. Like, I think that's where that fear stems from for me. Like,
if you speak a negative thought
if I acknowledge that I'm feeling this way, then I'm giving validity to it. Or at least that's the fucked up way of thinking about it in my head. That makes me want to run from it, you know?
Yeah, you and a lot of other people. There's nothing wrong with that. So one of the things you want to start to be aware of is that thought is bullshitting you. Your brain is bullshitting you right this second, telling you that. And again, when you diffuse, when you can have that distance cognitively and know, like, all right, my mind is telling me if I feel this, I'm going to feel it even, or if I acknowledge this, I'm going to speak it into existence and make it even stronger. Thought. I'm noticing the thought that.
Right.
My mind is telling me that. I'm noticing my brain is telling me the thought that. If I acknowledge this, I'll speak it into existence to make it worse. So it's changing the relationship with the thought. Right now, your relationship with that thought is its effect.
Yes.
This is how it is. And your relationship with that thought, in my opinion, needs to change.
I would agree.
Because it's not helpful. And it's trying to learn by subtraction. We don't learn that. We learn by adding. And so if I acknowledge the anxiety, sit with the anxiety, feel the anxiety, anxiety becomes less significant actually over time, but it also becomes something that, you know, is just real and honest. Like, there's red candles on a chart. You're going to delete all the red candles on a chart. That's what the equivalent of that stuff is, in my opinion. Like, I, this all this mm. not saying not to be positive. Not saying that. There's you know, positive psychology is legit. There's good stuff in positive psychology.
If you try to eliminate everything that makes you feel bad from your life, you are never going to feel good.
You are going to be using heroin 24/7. Like,
well, how does this interact with good boundaries too, right? Because if I know, okay, there's a person that when I interact with them, it doesn't feel good, and I'm going to have boundaries so that that doesn't happen. You're not making a case for just allowing everything awful in one's life, right? There's healthy boundaries too.
Yes, because now we are breaking outside of the skin.
Uh-huh,
into interpersonal and other people. That's a whole other...
And the world at large. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is what keeps me employed as a therapist. You know? To be honest, I mean, you know, it's most stuff is relational that people have issues with. Or a lot of stuff is relational that people have issues with. So it's a good point. It's just a different ballgame when it's getting outside of your skin. And yes, boundaries, just to acknowledge, because it's a good point, boundaries are important, and boundaries are, again, they are something you add, right?
Right.
You're not taking away boundaries to have a better relationship. You are adding boundaries to have a better relationship. Yes, you might be taking away the person, you know, setting limits with what they say to you, how you're treated, all that kind of good stuff. Yeah. And mindfulness does help with that too, because if you're acknowledging that, oh my God, whenever I see my whoever, I feel like crap, or, you know,
it's good
I was
to
feeling,
acknowledge that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just being aware of some of those correlations, I think, helps too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But should we, you mentioned an example. Should we try to get into one of these before it's too late?
History isn't just boring names and dates. It's weird, messy, and full of what were they thinking moments. The Buck Starts Here dives into the financial fiascos, questionable deals, and outright chaos that helped build America, $1 at a time. We mix in serious history from a fresh perspective, real, deep dives into the numbers and the moments that shaped the country, without the boring lecture. From presidential blunders to almost states, and the time an international war almost started over a pig, we break down the key events that made, and nearly broke, the nation. It's the fascinating untold history you won't find in the textbooks. Subscribe to the Buck Starts Here podcast for a deeper look at presidential history that's anything but dull.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Right,
so we're going to do a mindfulness session or
We're going to do a mindfulness exercise.
Great. I'm so excited about this. I've been waiting for this moment for a while. I just want to say because I think your mindfulness is awesome just generally. And I'll reiterate, I've said this a couple times. You know, I've been a part of so many workshop settings where people, including myself even, have led mindfulness sessions. And they kind of sound, they/we sound like the guy on the rock on the beach where, you know, there's like a, now everyone, it is time to be mindful. Like it has that vibe and I like your way. That's all. It just feels
listen
more like.
Listen to the sounds of the water.
Right.
The wave is lapping up. Well, I can't do it. It's embarrassing. You can do it sarcastically.
No, can't do it.
Yeah.
I was trying to make water noises. Didn't work.
That's what that was. I was like, is that a glitch? What's going on?
Yeah. So my mindfulness exercises have a little more cursing.
Okay, yeah. All right. Good.
They're a little more confrontational than most. This one is not.
Okay.
Honestly, this is the reason is. And anyone can go to my website and listen to a bunch of mindfulness sessions for free. Like it's not, I don't even have one of those trip wires to collect your email so I can bomb your email. I don't have any of that. You can just go to the site. You can click on, you can hear, you can see an explanation of the exercise and you can click on a button and listen to us. It's the only, you know, those sessions from the Discord are out there free public. So do it.
Nice.
It'll not be the mindfulness you are used to hearing. And I don't think this one is either. This one is a good, why I want to do this is it's a good illustration of the power of mindfulness. And I think in the context of trading in particular. All right. So a couple things before we start. Take a couple of deep breaths.
Okay.
And as you take those deep breaths, just know that anyone out there listening, three of us, we're likely to get distracted while we do this. That is fine. You hear me, perfectionist? That's fine. What you want to do is when you do get distracted is just bring your attention back to the exercise. In this case, bring your attention back to my voice. It is perfectly okay. It's if you didn't get distracted, it would be impressive and odd. So I wouldn't worry about it if you do. So this exercise, I'd like for everyone to start by putting your feet squarely on the ground, sitting upright, comfortable. And this is just about alertness, that position. Take a couple of deep breaths, and I would suggest closing your eyes. If you don't like closing your eyes, just fix your gaze onto something in front of you. And I'm going to start by noticing that you can feel yourself sitting in the chair that you're in right now. Notice how you can feel where the chair touches your body. You can feel your feet on the ground or your, wherever you're touching the ground, there's a chair pushing against your back or your butt, the floor pushing against your feet or vice versa, experience it differently. Just tune into that for a second. You need to pause, listeners out there, pause for a second. Now I want you to place your attention to the tip of your nose and begin to notice the sensation of air moving in and out of your nostrils. Paying attention to your breathing. Allow yourself to be in tune with the breathing and notice that you don't have to change how you're breathing. It's just gentle, easy air passing in and out. might want to notice the rise and fall of your chest. Sensation experiences, these sensational experiences during mindfulness are often something to tune into. Notice that rise and fall of your chest helps you get into the present, into the here and now. If you get distracted by your thoughts, just take a moment to notice where they took you. Bring your attention without judgment back to your breathing. It is okay to get distracted. You get distracted 100 times, you just bring your attention back 100 times. Now, I'm going to ask you to turn your full attention to your body.
Like you're
psychologically shining a flashlight on your body. I want you to notice your body, starting with your toes. Wiggle them, push them into the floor so you feel them, but notice your toes and start to scan up through your body. Right to the top of your head. Notice the position you're sitting in, the way your body feels in the chair. To pay attention to your body. And for the remainder of the exercise, I want whatever position you're in right this second, hold perfectly still. Do not move for the rest of the exercise. Do not move. You may notice you have an itch or a desire to move. Maybe you didn't freeze in the ideal position. You might notice some discomfort. But your only task at this time is to notice those desires, discomforts, itches. Maybe you want to push your hair away from the side of your left eye there. Don't do it. You might have an urge, but do not do it. Stay still. And if you want you to just notice that, staying still. You should notice that your body, your mind, your emotions, your thoughts, they might be asking you to do something. Like scratch, itch, move, adjust. But I also want you to notice that despite your body's requests, you don't have to listen to them. You do not have to obey. You can remain perfectly still despite these requests. Pause again for about 15 seconds. Notice that you don't need to react to any sensation, discomfort, urge. You can simply watch them come and go. You are separate from your mind. Listen to those requests. Not obey. Same way, if you have an urge to take a trade, not obey. Now you can move, release your attention from the stillness, just focus on the rise and fall of your breathing for the end here. Notice how your body feels, notice how you're feeling in the chair. Notice the placement of your feet, your arms, your head. You just want to, again, bring that self-awareness in. Paying attention to what's going on with your body, inside your body. your eyes are still closed, picture what the room you're in will look like when you open them, but don't open them just yet. And now open up your eyes and you are done.
That, I felt really good.
Yeah. That was so positive judgment. Why did it feel good?
It felt like a relief from the think it, do it. That it was almost like we were exercising some discipline. Like, I don't have to react to urges immediately.
Yes, sir. You stole my thunder. If that isn't discipline that's applicable to trading, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. But when I talked to Eric about stoicism, that was one of the examples he gave, is like micro discipline challenges he gives himself. Like, if I want to check my phone, I'll say, okay, I can check it in 5 minutes. I'll start a timer and I won't look until that timer is extended.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. It's
hopefully the timer's not on the phone.
Right.
Delayed gratification is the phrase I use for that.
Yeah.
And I encourage people to practice that in many contexts, phone checking, anything you want to do.
I don't know about you, Cleo, but it almost felt like there was some power coming back to me as the person who is now able to listen to requests and not act on them.
I loved that. I felt similarly. And it was such a weird thing. I didn't have any itches before you said to freeze. But then once you said, don't move, all of these impulses, like I wanted to move and attend to the various things that my body was requesting. And it felt good to be like, nope, we're not doing that.
That, and I'm, you guys, great answers. Because what Kyle said, that discipline thing, that, I mean, it, in this context, it's impulse control, right? And actually, control is really a misnomer. It's impulse management.
Right, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. You're not going to get rid of impulses. You're a human being. That's how we roll.
But taking a break from just doing it.
Yes.
Is really interesting.
And what you said, Cleo, that confidence and competence that can rise from the ability to do that is going to help your trade. Because if you're confident you can not take a trade, you're a better trader. You know, if you understand and you can tolerate not taking a trade and ride out the discomfort, that's an edge, because most traders can't.
Yeah.
And I say most, I'm including everyone, because most traders fail, right?
Yeah.
And it's absolutely an edge and confidence builder. And when you have those, in my opinion, when you have those experiences of some people might call it self-control, whatever it is, I call it urge surfing. You know,
would you say urge surfing?
Yeah,
I like that.
Urge surfing.
So many good terms.
Urge surfing. Yeah, you know, you can't stop the waves, but you can learn to ride them.
Right, all right.
Be mindful. Don't urge surf.
I think Goldstein said that. No, urge surf is a type of applied mindfulness, is what I'm getting at. Like, it's a way to use mindfulness to ride out those urges. Like, that exercise is a good example of urge surfing.
Hey, tension, we're going for a ride now.
Yeah. Exactly. You, hello, anxiety, we're going to go trade.
Yeah.
What's up, homie?
Right,
I know,
right,
I get
right.
anxious. We're going to do this together versus I'm going to fight this anxiety. I'm going to crush it with my mind vice.
And make some money.
I'm so badass.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're broke in 2 weeks. That's not how it works. You know, there might be people out there that won't get into that. There may be people that can do that, but it's not most. And
yeah.
If you're listening to this, you're probably not one of those people.
Yeah, just the fact that you made it this far into a mindfulness episode means you're probably more willing to. Yeah,
that's true. That's very true. That's very true. And so as retail traders, you know, all this access we have to trading now, there's a far bigger market in trading. There's far more people in trading. There's far more personalities in trading. There's far more barriers that are removed, not just financially because of like prop firms and stuff, but because, you know, we don't have to be the type of personality that can last on Wall Street. mm-hmm. or they can be like the old school prop firms. I mean, I got a couple clients that work for like physical, like real prop firms. And I mean, the stuff that goes on in some of those places is effing bananas. Well, I can't even
think. Last time we talked to you, we talked about the whole idea of like there's no one size fits all psychology approach to trading. And that's kind of the mindset that things have been in for the last, I don't know, what, 50 years or the history of it. Like, it's only recently that we've started to see people from different walks of life who don't fit into that mold that can be successful.
Exactly. I mean, it took a certain personality type to be on Wall Street, to hang and to be around those guys, to be that competitive, to be in those environments. I mean, that takes a certain personality, very type A. And certainly, you know, now screen traders, whatever you want to call them, retail traders, they don't have to have that. Mm-hmm. They don't have to survive the environment. They don't have to be, you know, aloof emotionally or even like a sociopath. And not all sociopaths are bad. Like, you could be a sociopath and be a good person.
No, you mean it in the technical version of it, meaning that
the technical version where they really where they do not struggle with their emotions at all. Like, there are those people, but they're probably not listening right now.
Because they're too busy making money.
Yeah, and you can't, you know, it's like you can't force yourself to be something you're not. A lot of people want to do that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, dude, you got to be who you are and figure out what trading is for you.
Yeah.
So you're going to make it. You can't emulate.
You can learn from other people. You can take pieces, but it has to be yours. You have to turn it into your own thing. You can't copy and paste. It's not going to ever work that way.
Yeah. You know, last night during a group coaching session, I turned on a Twitter Spaces that had four really prominent, pretty much universally respected traders. Definitely people I high respect, and you know, a couple of them I definitely learned from. And the reason I was playing it for the group wasn't for their insights on the market, on the macro situation, or their position, or what they think is going to happen or has happened or whatever. The point of listening to it was they were just talking. These are four well-respected, really good traders. They're just talking about their intuition. They're just talking about what they feel, what they think. There was very little data presented, some by one of them that's a little more macro. And the point is, how much different are they than you?
Mm-hmm.
They're just talking out their ass like anybody else. Their ass may be way more educated and experienced, so it's worth listening to. But when it comes down to it, the only edge is psychological, in my opinion. You can find some temporary edges, technical, TA-wise and stuff. They're not going to last forever. Most likely will get corrected over time. But the edge you can have is trading, you know, with a clear mind, objectively.
Responsibly.
Responsibly to your friends and family and life and future. And doesn't take a special person or a, you know, brilliant trader to do that. Yes, you got, don't get me wrong. The ultimate intervention for trading psychology is knowing how to trade.
Right.
Don't let any trading psychology person tell you anything other than that. That's BS. That is the ultimate trading psychology intervention. You got to know what you're doing. You know, it's like if you push someone into a job they have no experience with and you expect them not to be anxious, are you crazy?
Right.
You know, like, of course they're going to be anxious. Like, you send them into some job, what the hell they're doing. So no, understanding the job, learning trading is the first step. I do not take new. I don't work with new traders, brand new traders. It's just not good. They don't even know what they don't know yet.
Yeah.
So, anyways,
I still don't know what I don't know.
Yeah. Amen.
We all don't know what we don't know.
This is true. The more you know, the less you know, et cetera, et cetera. But so, the point is like, psych's the edge. If you can have a better relationship, I mean, another thing. During that conversation, you know, one of those traders was really self-deprecating and getting hard on themselves and like talking about how they're beating themselves up. I mean, they're just human. Like we got to understand that we have in it within ourselves to, you know, put ourselves in a state that's going to increase the probability of trading most effectively. And that's what mindfulness is about. It is not a guarantee. It is not magic. It's a great intervention. It is very similar to what they talk about the zone. It is not flow, that flow state, that's different. And you can't, if you want to talk flow state, you can't get in the flow state unless you're mindful first, unless you're pretty good at mindfulness, because it's a stepping stone into a flow state.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that you can do these things that these great traders can do. You might even be able to do them better if you are you when you trade, if you are in touch with the big picture, if you're in the present moment, not in the past, not in the future, because that's another part of mindfulness essential is it keeps you in the present.
Mm-hmm.
The present moment on a chart is price action. You know, everything else is in the past, you know, the chart printing out itself, you know, being painted, that's the past. Everything you can visually see on a chart is the past. You cannot see the future unless you got an awesome chart. Please reach out.
Yeah. please.
But you've got the present moment to make the most effective decisions at the time, make the most objective decisions at the time, make the decisions that are, you know, going to affect you and your life the best way at that particular time. And the more you have that in your consciousness, again, learning by addition, being mindful of all these things, being mindful of your full experience, then it's easier to make decisions that serve those values and serve your life. It's easier to cut a trade. It's easier to accept that a trade is done because you have perspective. You realize like, okay, there's another trade around the corner. That old cliche ass statement, or there's always another trade coming. And it's like a trade, it's like a bust. So, okay, cool. But like, why and how do you make that happen? It's a cool statement, but this is how you make it happen.
I know there's another bus coming, but I get in trouble because I don't want to wait for the next one.
Exactly. And you get hit by the bus.
Because I'm chasing it down the street.
Yeah. Exactly. But
then, Sean, I think that's been just a great place to kind of wrap this thing up. I think covered more than I actually expected to get through with mindfulness. And I really do appreciate your time here. Mm-hmm. One last time for everybody listening, if they want to learn more, where can they go to check out those exercises that you got listed? How can they check out your Discord if they want to? Where else can they find you?
Soundperformancepsychology.com is the website. If you go under services, you can see the Discord. And then on the website, there's something called Clear Mindset, and the mindfulness link is below there. It's all free. You can go in and read about mindfulness. You can listen to the exercises that we do in the Discord. That's the free thing. You know, it'll definitely be a different take on mindfulness that you've heard. And it's always contextualized into trading and often, you know, into the context of that day. But
This mindfulness was great, but it was more vanilla than I'm used to with you.
It was less swearing.
Yes. It was vanilla is a good term. I felt like
it was good.
It felt like it illustrated
the concepts.
My goal was experiential learning for this podcast,
and I do like how you add the stress. Every mindfulness session that you do, you add some sort of stress component, and that's valuable.
That makes sense. Yeah,
yeah. I'm trying to evoke something to latch onto mm-hmm. be mindful of whatever. And in that case, you know, to understand that you do not have to listen to what your brain is telling you. You don't have to listen to what your mind is telling you. You have a choice. You are not a slave to your mind. You know, you have autonomy. You have agency over what your mind tells you. And that sounds a little strange, but you know, when you experience that,
when you don't practice it, you kind of forget it, right?
Yeah, and it does take a fair amount of practice, but it's well worth
it. Good
and
practice, yeah,
it is. And becoming a practitioner of mindfulness again, how many traders do you think actually will put in the work and do this? If you're one of them, you've got edge, period.
Well, I think that's probably going to do it for today's episode. I really want to say thank you to Sean for joining us here. Mm-hmm. As he said, you can go to soundperformancepsychology.com if you want to go check out some of the stuff he's got to offer. I'll make sure that I link the mindfulness exercises directly in the show notes so you don't have to find that. And I believe we still have a 50% off your first 3 months in the Discord. I think you made for us last time you were on. Do we still have that?
I'll add it. If we don't, I'll make sure it's still operational.
I'll double check that before this gets published. But
No. Yes, we do.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll make sure that all those links are in the show notes. You can also visit Banda Traders Podcast afterwards so you never miss a new episode. We will be back soon with another exciting guest to fill our minds. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a great day.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.